Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Real World Fitness Podcast. This is Bill. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to tune in and listen to us today. And I'd like to start the show, like I always do, by thanking all the kind people who have taken the time to send me emails with questions and comments. Lots of good questions coming in, and we will address them all eventually. If I have not answered your email, I will. And we will select questions from the emails that are commonly asked questions and address them here on the show. Our featured interview today is rather lengthy, so we're going to jump right to that. I'd like to give a little bit of background. In the summer of 2012, I was attending the NFB convention here in Orlando, Florida. And I want to just preface this by saying I'm not political. I'm not pro or con ACB or NFB. I believe both organizations do a lot of good. They just have two very different approaches. If it was ACB that was conveniently located, I would have been attending that convention. Didn't matter. I just happened to be at the NFB, and I was one of the featured presenters at their sports and recreation groups meeting. The gentleman who spoke after me caught my attention. We spoke at length after we were both done with the meeting, and we found that we had a lot of commonalities. The most interesting one was that we were both born in the same state and probably in the same hospital. Spoke with Stephen at length throughout that convention. It just seems like our paths kept crossing, and I really liked his enthusiasm very much. He had this legitimate joy and energy and an excitement about this new self-defense program that he was working with. It was obviously in its early stages. He'd been working on it for a while, but had a long way to go still. He had some of his graduate trainees, coaches, if you will, with him, and I was able to sit in on one of their meetings and listen to some of their plans and get more information about the program. I stayed in touch with Stephen after the convention via email and the occasional Skype call, and saw that he was making progress and they were scheduling trainings around the country. And I had decided that I wanted to take the training myself. It took a while for there to be one that was logistically feasible for me. And I took the program here in Fort Lauderdale this past October. It was a very intense but lots of fun 3 days, and I could see a tremendous, tremendous benefit in what Stephen is doing with this one-touch project, this self-defense training for blind. And I felt it was imperative that I give him this platform to let the world know about it. So today we have Stephen Nichols, the creator, director, father of the One Touch Project, and we have Carrie and Lori, who are two of his graduate instructors who've gone through the coaching program and who are now training people themselves. So let's get to that interview right now. Hi, this is Bill with Real World Fitness, and today we're doing something a little bit different. We kind of have a panel discussion, and we actually have three guests. The primary guest today, I met at the NFB conference in 2012. We were both featured presenters at their sports and recreation divisions meeting. Well, somebody just asked him how long we've been friends, and he said 2 years. And I said, yeah, and we knew each other for about a year before that. So he is the founder and creator and chief cook and bottle washer for a project called the One Touch Project, which is a self-defense training for the blind, which he knows a lot more about than I do, and we'll let him go into that. And we also have two sisters, Lori and Carrie, who are both certified in teaching this self-defense, and we're going to talk to them about going through the program, why they did it, how they did it, and all that kind of good stuff. So I want to thank everybody for being here, and how is everybody today?
Really good. Thank you, Bill.
Really good. Yeah, thank you.
Wonderful. I'm so glad you're all here. Stephen, let's start with how and why you created this. You have perfectly normal vision. To my knowledge, you don't have any family members that are visually impaired. What possessed you to create a blind self-defense training program?
That's a perfectly good question, Bill, and you're correct on all the above points. The idea actually came when I was living in London. One of my students of a martial arts school, I teach martial arts as well, of course, was a support worker for the Royal National Institute for the Blind. And as such, he was in constant contact with the blind community in London and Britain in general. And he asked if I'd teach a seminar for blind people, self-defense. And the reason why he asked that is because, allegedly, according to him, there was a great deal of conversation about feeling insecure, traveling, being outside. This is what was put forward to me in any event. So we scheduled a class over 2 days, and I thought I was prepared to teach this kind of a course. I thought I was, and stood in front of 20 blind people and basically had a complete meltdown. I mean, all of my teaching tools, terminology, it was a train wreck. If they managed to learn anything, I'd be amazed. But my learning curve wasn't a curve. It was more of a spike. All of the cliches, which seem ridiculous now, such as saying, do you see what I mean, speaking with your hands, all of that quintessential ridiculous business, I was hit full blown. And after the 2 days, apparently they enjoyed it, a presenter for the BBC stuck a microphone in my face and said, Mr. Nichols, presumably this is a course, quote unquote, or program, which you want throughout Britain. And I said, oh, absolutely. That's what we've been working towards. And that was, Bill, that was the actual impetus which made me go home and write a program. And that was about 5 years ago. And since then, it's developed radically from just being a self-defense course to social rehabilitation, vocational rehabilitation, and a real process of addressing issues of security and insecurity.
Okay. So let's just backtrack. So what you're saying sounds like it pretty much happened by accident. Someone shoved a mic in your mouth and you went, okay, sounds like a plan.
That is exactly what happened, Bill. I didn't lie in bed one night, as you say, being fully sighted. The normal clientele, which I work with, are police, bodyguards, or used to work with rather, police, bodyguards, women's self-defense, children's self-defense. I didn't lie in bed one night and go, I know what I'll do. I'll forensically study the nature of assaults on people perceived as vulnerable members of society and put together a rehabilitative tool via the martial arts / self-defense. That's not what happened at all. What happened was this BBC reporter basically, quite unknowingly, thought there was a program already in existence. And what was really surprising is that after doing a bit of research, it became clear that there wasn't any program like this in existence anywhere. So that was the gap, and I was hooked immediately.
Well, sometimes the greatest discoveries happen by accident, so that's apparently how this came about. Let's backtrack a little bit, Stephen, and before this all happened, as you say, you were a martial arts instructor. Let's talk about your personal background and your martial arts, the form you teach, and your level and so forth. In other words, your credentials and your skills.
Okay, what got me into training, the impetus for me to start training and teaching, is I was brutally assaulted at the age of 13 by 6 guys. It's not what you would call a fight, Bill. It was just a sheer assault, no question about it. And started thinking, well, it's a pretty character-developing experience if you live through it. I don't want that to happen again, that's for sure. And so I started not really knowing where to begin, boxing, wrestling, fencing. And then a friend of mine said, well, if you enjoy that, why don't you try martial arts, something like jiu-jitsu? And I said, okay. And as I say, I was hooked immediately from that. It was kind of a Karate Kid story. My instructor was 65 years old when I met him, and he was my teacher for 22 years in a classical form of jiu-jitsu. I've dabbled in other kinds of martial arts, a little bit of Filipino, a little bit of a Hawaiian fighting style called Lua, certain striking arts, Shotokan Karate and Kenpo. And, well, basically, as far as credential-wise, I run 3 different schools in Britain. I'm a guest lecturer across the United States and a couple of different schools in Europe, and fly occasionally to Poland and other countries to work with the police, bodyguards, and intervention squads, if that makes any sense.
That all makes a lot of sense. So you're obviously very capable of instructing the martial arts, but then As you say, you stood in front of 20 blind people and probably pointed and did hand gestures and did all the things that people unrealizingly, unwittingly, if you will, do in front of blind people, and probably made a total fool of yourself, but still managed to teach them.
They seem to enjoy it, but I can't emphasize enough about making a total fool of myself. You're absolutely correct. And that, as an instructor, when you do get challenged, you know, either you back off or you attempt to rise to the challenge. And basically, that's what catapulted me into doing this kind of work. That's really what did it. I found it just, the students were incredible. The desire for the knowledge was very, very high. The commitment and dedication was just extraordinary. And I was sold right away. And of course, for me, it wasn't so much as having to learn physical techniques or so forth. It was really trying to adapt, really trying to take those techniques which were most appropriate, and we can get into that later if you like, as determined by the nature of assaults on blind people, and make them very, very, very easily accessible, for lack of a better term. I'd like to say at this point that under no circumstances does the One Touch program suggest that a blind person couldn't do any other martial art. That's not the point whatsoever. The One Touch itself is not a martial art per se. It is a self-defense program which has really gone very, very deeply into forensically studying, and by forensically I mean case after case after case being examined, as to the nature of assaults which seem to most commonly be perpetrated against those people who are perceived as being blind, a.k.a. Cane, dog, etc.
Okay, so you decided that there was something worth doing here after you've done your research and realized nobody's doing this. I can do this. You've started analyzing how to teach somebody who can't see. And from, you said, 5 years this started. When was the first group of students when you were actually prepared with a curriculum and an actual program? After, how long did it take you from that first event to the point that you actually had created a curriculum and went, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to teach it, and where did it go from there?
It took about a year, actually, for me to write everything out and to get the research, as much research as I could, taken care of. And boy, has the program has radically evolved after that. We were headhunted from London, ironically, to San Francisco, the San Francisco Lighthouse. And I say ironically because I lived in Palo Alto / Stanford from the age of 7 to 18 in California. So I was headhunted by my hometown, if you will, all the way from London to teach a course there. At that time, the emphasis was on the physicality, what worked, what didn't work. And I suppose it was about, yeah, it was about 1 year, Bill, before it actually took a real form. And since then, I have been corrected repeatedly by blind people taking the course. Can you do this? Can you do that? Would this work? You didn't explain that clearly. You took this for granted in the explanation. So it's been refined substantially by the time both Carrie and Lori chose to take the coaching certification course.
Well, it's been a work in progress and it's evolving. And I think any program takes several years to really fine-tune, and you're going to find, because you're dealing with people with a disability, you're also going to find people that are multi-disability that you're going to have to figure out adaptations for, and you're going to have to also deal with, well, it's just like when you taught children, and I'm sure you taught senior self-defense, it's a matter of just creating new adaptations, and you obviously are able to do that. So your first official course was the San Francisco Lighthouse, and then the gentleman in the video, the gentleman that you mentioned many times, your friend in England, how did he become a part of this, and who exactly is he?
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that point, Bill. His name is Umit Turkisev. Umit is just a fantastic guy. I know from personal experience he would not mind me saying what I'm about to say about his past. Umit was tortured. It was a time in Turkey where there was a lot of political unrest, and he was kidnapped and tortured and blinded in one eye and pretty much broken and left for dead. He was taken to an emergency room, had a recovery, and lost, I believe, around 85% of vision in his other eye, 3 ribs, 1.5 kidney to cancer, plus 2-centimeter brain tumor, et cetera, et cetera. And I met Umit while teaching at the Kensington Guide Dogs Seminar in London. And this man moves like a dream, still moves like an absolute dream. And his proprioception, his dexterity, his balance, it was unbelievable. He stood out like, I don't know how to describe it. So I approached him and said, if you don't mind me asking, I don't mean to be rude, what is your background? I mean, you just move incredibly well. And he told me this story right then and there about how he'd been kidnapped and all of this horrific business. And then with a massive smile on his face, I'll never forget this, a massive smile on his face, he said, but before that, I was a professional boxer. So I'm like, okay, I need to know this guy. I've got to meet this guy properly. So I arranged a meeting with him a week afterwards for lunch, and I suggested that he become an instructor of the One Touch program. He said, well, can I do that? And I said, you've got it in spades. You're far more qualified to teach this than I am. And Umit traveled twice a week for an hour and a half in each direction to train with me for an hour and a half. And he became the first One Touch coach in Britain. One point on that is that one of the things about the One Touch, which really, really, really defines it, is that when we look at the demographic of blindness and disability or people with other abilities, whatever terminology you'd like to use, that without having a coaching course where someone can learn to teach this, to actually create other instructors, it really doesn't make a difference how good someone is as a teacher. If I were to set up Steve's Blind Emporium Martial Arts School in Colorado, how many people could come to it? So the coach's course is what's so such an umbrella for this program, which, again, Carrie and Laurie are now both certified coaches themselves. And Umit has consistently, consistently corrected me and taken this to a completely new level.
So you say he was a professional boxer. Does he have any additional, 'cause I recall you saying his hand speed was amazing. Does he have any additional martial arts formal training in addition to the one-touch training that you and he worked with?
No, he does not.
Okay. Okay, well then.
He was the boxing part, and he is 100% blind.
Okay, and he is, I guess you would consider him your number two man behind yourself. He is the only master instructor, so to speak.
I consider him a peer, completely level with me. His teaching ability is extraordinary. The way he works with people, I would consider him absolutely peer level. And that's only because I don't want to say he's better than me.
Okay, so then obviously with the skills that you taught him, which are the same skills you taught Laurie and Carrie, and the same skills I might add that you taught me, I didn't mention earlier that I recently went through the training and Steven beat the heck out of me for 3 days.
All right,
so maybe, two and a half days. So with those skills that you've taught, and you didn't teach him anything, you didn't teach either of them or me, correct?
Nope. The only difference I would say is that he's been practicing for the last 4 years or so.
And I'm sure his dedication, and he has the practice like he had as a boxer, so it's like a martial artist with their constant practice rather than just the average person. So his skill level has to be extraordinary.
Well, it's through his dedication, Bill. It's through his dedication.
Well, that comes with being a professional athlete and fighting back from what you said he went through. That's just, obviously, he's a very, very strong-willed, dedicated person to pull himself back from all of that. So at the time I met you in 2012 at the NFB, it was very early on, and you had some seminars going on and some certifications going on, but you were still very much in the formative stages, I would guess?
That is correct. That is absolutely valid.
And you've done everything, obviously, to spread the word. You appear at the NFB conference. You appear at the ACB conference. You've worked with various lighthouses around the country.
That's certainly true. We have been working, and I say we've got a team. I obviously couldn't do this all by myself. There's Secretary Miranda Brown. There's a whole different group in Britain working on this. We've had interest from Portugal, France, and Israel. We'll get to that when we can. But we've worked with the NFB, the ACB, NATV, NOAA, the lighthouses, several different state departments, and the One Touch is being used across the U.S. in schools for the blind as an add-on, a curriculum. We've worked extensively with the AER and lots of other organizations. Lots. I mean, the Veterans Association, the VA in the U.S. is a whole, that's a whole story in itself. The exchange programs which we're setting up between the Blind Veterans UK, where we also have coaching courses going on. It's established, it's recognized, they've endorsed it. We're going to be doing the same sort of thing here with Wounded Warriors. We are currently operating, and this is just the veterans part of it, we're going to be doing a coaching certification course in Long Beach. That's on April 13th to 15th. That's the Long Beach VA. We're currently operating out of Battle Creek, Michigan, and Ann Arbor, Michigan. And the exchange programs through the Genesis program, which we'll be talking about in Long Island, looks extremely promising. There's a lot of encouragement for that. So the amount of organizations that we work with is a herald to it in itself of the validity of the program. It's very different, for example, Bill, than saying, do judo because it's accessible. It's a different animal. We're not working towards that. The application of the One Touch is for women and children, the elderly, young adults. We've worked with single, double, triple amputees, as you've mentioned yourself, working with deaf blind. As a matter of fact, in the Seattle Lighthouse, we were doing a coaching certification course where there were three languages happening at one time. There was audio description, there was American Sign Language, and there was tactile American Sign Language, all happening at the same time. It's just really, really, really amazing work. So in one evening, one weekend, the One Touch presented at the International Symposium of Adapted Physical Activity in Turkey. We were, I believe, with the San Antonio Veterans Administration. I was working in the Lighthouse, and at the same time, there was a presentation going on in New York for NAPV International. So, yeah. We seem to have got a foothold.
It took some time and it took a whole lot of work on your part, but obviously it's snowballing and you're getting in with the VA and the Wounded Warriors. That is a huge market in and of itself. Now, the training that you mentioned in Long Beach is strictly a veterans group?
We asked if they wanted to keep it strictly veterans, and surprisingly, they said no. And that really did surprise me, because what these men and women who have served have been through, very frequently that takes a very particular approach all of its own. However, the Long Beach one is open to non-veterans, so that's going to be very interesting and quite possibly very challenging as well.
Okay, well, if anyone is interested in that, Stephen's contact information will be in the show notes accompanying this episode. Let's take a moment and wake those two young ladies up that are probably snoozing while you're talking. And either
it's my secret power.
Exactly. That's that hypnosis technique. Either one of you that would like to take this. Now, we have Lori and we have Carrie, who are sisters who live in Iowa. And I'm going to try and get all this right. Both of which are married with children, one with two, one with three. And they both recently, well, I don't know how recently, both of them have become certified to coach/teach the One Touch project. So would either one of you that would like to jump in and tell me a little about your background, why you took it, when you took it, and all that kind of good stuff?
One Touch actually came, I had went through the Department for the Blind Orientation Center last year, 2 years ago, and Stephen and some of his other colleagues have came to give a presentation on the One Touch for the whole orientation center and the office. And I was just impressed from the beginning, just the way they described what was going on to the success they'd had. One of my, I guess, my issues when I was going through the Department for the Blind, one of the things obviously we had to do was learn travel. And that terrified me, because even when I had sight, I wasn't one to venture out, and I just was scared. And they came and they talked a little bit about it, One Touch and certification, and I walked out of there feeling like maybe this was something that I needed to do for me. And I told my sister about it, and we talked about it, and it kind of dropped from there. Then they came back and gave a 2-hour seminar, and at that point I asked Lori to come with me, and she was a little hesitant, but she did come. And in that 2 hours, it was just, I guess, kind of life-changing for me, because I walked out of there feeling I guess, like, I could take on the world in a sense, not only from just...
Empowered?
You know, yes, I was very empowered and very, like, if I can do this, what else can I do? And yes, I could, you know, they showed us a few moves and stuff, but also just kind of taking a look at myself and what was kind of holding me back. And it was from there that we decided and talked about, you know, wanting to do this certification. And we had the opportunity, they came to Des Moines and we jumped on it. And we practiced with family and friends and showed our kids. And, you know, it's just done a lot for me personally, as a person, to be able to do.
Okay, let me just interrupt you for 1 second, if I may.
Uh-huh.
You said it was 2 years ago that you were going through the Department for the Blind. So you've only lost your vision very recently.
No, well, I graduated last February. I was there, I think I was there about 10 months, but my vision has been, I've been losing my vision for about 10 years, but lost probably in the last 5 years, I had a pretty good jump where, you know, I've probably been using my cane for the last 2.5 years, where it's got to a point where I needed assistance.
So you have the RP and the slow degeneration and then the big jumps and stayed steady and all that kind of fun stuff. I lived with it as well. I had some usable vision until about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you talked your sister into doing it. It sounds like it was great for you. Now, Lori, it's your turn. What have you done with this since you've gotten the certification? Have you actually taught anyone other than your family and close friends?
Well, not officially. Our first official class is going to be, we've been invited to teach at our state convention for the Iowa Council, the United Blind, and those will be our mm-hmm. first official classes. We've taught a lot of friends and family and done a lot of training since starting the certification process.
Okay, well, let me ask you, your friends, your family are all, I'm guessing, mostly sighted. So have you unofficially worked with any other blind people with teaching the techniques?
Yes, we have.
Okay. How did that go?
You know, it's a learning. I've heard people say, you know, because I'm blind, well, teaching someone who's blind is easy. It's been a learning process. It's something that I've actually had to think about because, especially as you begin to learn one touch, you know, the moves are easy to learn, simple to do, and it just becomes routine. So there are times that I've had to stop and say, okay, well, I need to describe how I'm rotating my wrist or where I'm putting that foot placement. And having a sister who is blind, you know, she's probably been my number one student. So, you know, we've done a lot of training together.
Okay, that's excellent. Carrie, other than working with your sister, she says you've been her best student. I'm going to guess you would say she's been your best student, or is she better than you?
No, she's been my best student. We kind of work together, I guess. So, but we've done a lot of practicing together and also with some friends that are also blind. And like Stephen said, we're going to be doing, or we're doing the state convention in April. We're doing training then, and then in July we'll be doing the ACB convention in Texas. We're doing training there as well.
Excellent. So the both of you are going to Texas and going to be doing a... actually, at the national conventions, you do, is this going to be an actual full training, or is this going to be a bunch of demos like I know they've done in the past at the NFB?
I believe it's going to be like a two-hour, is that correct, Lori, the two-hour one?
That's my understanding, is that we're going to be doing like a two-hour workshop where we will, it'll be an introduction to One Touch, but we'll be showing a basic lock and a feed and a basic release, and so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's not someone can say, I'd like to take the training and I'm going to ACB, and this is an introduction to let people see it, to get people to have some interest and some understanding in it.
Correct, yeah, to show what One Touch can do for them.
Excellent. So two are you going to do that, and you're going to do the April one. Sounds like you're definitely doing something with this. Let me ask, other than this, do either of you, are you basically physically active? Do you exercise? Are you involved in any other sports? Or, well, I can't say any other sports since this isn't really a sport, but any other athletic interests on either of your parts?
I've just recently, in the last few months, I've just started training with a lady at our local gym. We're running together now. She's kind of my guide runner, I guess, if you will. And Lori and I both are on the baseball team, the Iowa Reapers, and we both started that last year. So that's been
excellent.
A lot of fun as well. Yeah.
Cool. Was that before or after you took the training?
It was after, wasn't it? Yes, after. Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like taking this training kind of maybe stimulated you to get a little more social and a little more active as well?
Absolutely.
I would say so. You know, one thing I could say about the experience One Touch is, and what a difference it's made in my life is, you know, it kind of came to me at a point in my life where I was having a pretty difficult time. I had had kind of a rapid increase in vision loss, and I work from home. My children are leaving home to go to school and live life, and so it was kind of a perfect storm for isolation and insecurity. And, you know, I took that One Touch course, and since then, so many opportunities have came into my life. You know, I left there feeling like, well, if I can do this, then I can do that. And that's when, you know, it was a few months later that the Iowa Reapers came into our life. And we're not just active in, you know, in sports. It's really changed our life. Since then, we both serve on two different boards, and we started a couple support groups. And, you know, we're not just physically active and getting out there and playing baseball or running, but it's made a difference in being active in all areas of our life.
See, that is so much more important in the big picture than whether you actually ever teach anyone. I mean, this is just, it sounds like this has been a life-changing thing for both of you. It's a socializing thing, and it especially if you were at that point where your kids are leaving, you're losing your vision, life sucks. And then this came along.
It did.
Okay, you can laugh, but I mean,
it's true, though. And the thing is that it's made such a difference in my life that when I teach, I hope people walk away feeling, if I can do this, then I can do that.
Absolutely. I'm curious, when I completed it, I am a hardcore gym guy. I've trained with weights for more years than I can remember and so on, but I'd never had an interest in any martial arts. And after I completed that, I started looking into taking up BJJ, which for financial reasons hasn't happened, but it kind of stimulated my interest in taking that. Okay, this is not a martial art, but it's a lot of martial arts techniques. This might make me interested in martial arts. Did it have that effect on either of you?
Yes, it did. Yeah. You know, Stephen asked me when we started the certification process if I had taken any martial arts or self-defense classes before, and I had not. And, you know, it definitely sparked an interest in me. And since then, I've done a lot of research, and I've checked out other programs. I'm thinking about taking up boxing. I don't like running on the treadmill, but I need cardio, and, you know, I want something that I can get out there and work my total body. So that's why I thought about taking up boxing or checking into some other program just for recreation.
Well, based on that, if you would like to get in touch with me when we are done with this, you can get my email from Stephen or my phone number from Stephen, or I'll just give it to you when we're finished here. I'd be happy to try and give you some advice and some direction and some things that would be very effective cardio-wise, that I don't believe in long, steady cardio doing a treadmill, but I love kettlebells, and there's a lot of other things you can do that'll have that cardiovascular effect, and I'd be happy to talk with you about that if you'd like some help.
Sounds great.
Okay, now I really appreciate both of your time, but I want to jump back to Stephen since we're on the subject of other martial arts. Now, Stephen, in our class in October, there was a gentleman that you kept referring to as professor, and you showed a great deal of respect to and said he was an extremely accomplished martial artist. How many percentage-wise or how often do you end up with people who are already great martial artists or martial arts instructors, such as Steve that was with us? And why are they there? Why was he there? He's already, you said he knew more than you as far as martial arts go. Why was he there?
Absolutely, Bill. Absolutely. We're referring to Professor Steve Barber. The professor term, I don't use it for myself, certainly in this context, is an honorary one. It does not constitute a PhD, but within the field which we work, with the martial arts, it's it's considered a very good title to have. Professor Barber is from the same lineage, which is the Kodankan style of jiu-jitsu, which I'm from. I instruct with Professor Sig Kufroff, and I say all of that because, as a preamble, of course, many martial artists are interested in the One Touch project initially because they think, hey, that's a really great idea. I'm going to come in and I'm going to show this, this, and this, and you could do this, this, or that. Different techniques, that is. And what tends to happen is they find that when they're blindfolded, and we're talking about sighted martial artists at this point, and Professor Barber is sighted, which is why I'm speaking about this point. When somebody's, you know, under the blinders, the blackout blinds, whatever the correct expression is or terminology, frequently they find that what they were doing before really doesn't work. And it's a very, very humbling experience. To be honest, most of the martial artists who take the One Touch project don't continue with it. And one of the reasons for that is because of the culture of the martial arts. It's called martial for a reason. You know, if you're used to walking into a room and having, you know, 40, 50, 70, or 150 people suddenly snap to attention, well, that's not what we're doing with a One Touch whatsoever. So many of them have a difficult time, you know, checking their black belts into the door, you know, taking off the crown and leaving the scepter and really, really trying to work appropriately and to really, really, you know, do what's necessary under the circumstances rather than what they're used to. Now, Professor Barber had heard about this program. We met a few years ago at NFB. I think it was in Orlando. Yeah, it was in Orlando. And he was just interested in it. He was very interested in how it worked, what the application was, you know, how it was different from what he was normally doing. And I think you may remember, Bill, that one of the big challenges that Professor Barber had was the actual verbalization, the actual audio description. I don't say that in any kind of criticism. It's just, you know, this was a totally new field for him. So he was there as a real, real interest. Hopefully he'll be coming to teach at the NFB with me this year. But for him, it was an academic pursuit. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. I enjoyed working with him, but definitely what you're saying is true. He had, once you put the blindfold on him, his 40 years of experience didn't really seem to mean a great deal because he was frustrated with the blindfold and he was frustrated with trying to verbalize techniques that he could do in his sleep. He was a lot of fun to work with, but you could definitely tell that it was a challenge for him.
Oh, completely. And when you start going into the sensitivity training aspect, you take these guys who are really top of their field, or very, very good, we'll say, slam the blindfold on them and be a sighted guide through the middle of Grand Central Station or King's Cross, London, and you suddenly feel that hand white-knuckling on your arm and tiny little steps, the whole kit and caboodle. By the way, just as an addendum there, I'm not saying that that simulation is a real understanding of being blind, of course. I'm not insinuating that. But to take someone out of their environment, a lot of people can't handle that, though. And without them being able to handle that, without someone really being able to step out of their normal box of thinking, they're not going to be an appropriate one-touch coach. By the same token, with regards to Professor Barber, I've got full confidence in him. That's just on the side. I've just seen a lot of people come in with an idea and leave with a very, very different idea. I was the first one to experience that with regards to the One Touch, and as much as, you know, as I said just opening this, I was well out of my depth, well out of my depth. But for me, that's why I pursued it, because it was so intoxicating. It was so, how can I try to get what's inside of my head and describe it properly and accurately and appropriately, you know? I didn't have any of the skill set or manners for, you know, asking if you wanted assistance, offering an arm, and, you know, all of that stuff. So for me, it was, and still is extremely exciting. But to answer your question, that's why a lot of people come in with an idea and then they leave with another one, hopefully a good one.
Okay, I can definitely see it being very humbling for the, as you say, the multi-degree black belt who thinks he's going to come in and show you some new techniques. Professor Barber definitely was very comfortable and receptive. He had no problem with it, with the blindfold. He had no problem with going, I'm the student in this environment. But I really enjoyed working with him. He made it fun. You did too. You're challenging.
It's gotta
be fun. It has to be. You're not going to learn it if it's not fun.
Well, and to be fair also, Bill, we are talking about a platform of the worst thing in the world, which is aggressive violence, taking advantage of someone else, if you don't approach it, not to detract from the seriousness, but if you don't approach it with a can-do sense of humor, or to not to detract again from the horrific aspect of it, but if you only concentrate on that, you can't get anything done. You just want to go home and cry. So you have to have a sense of humor and a sense of empowerment when you're doing these things, when you're practicing. And that's the best way. That's the best way to make people want to do it. I can't speak for Carrie and Laurie on this, but I can a little bit because I'm so proud of them and I've seen them work together and seen them work with other students. And, you know, the enjoyment which comes out of it is what makes it worthwhile. You know, looking at the big picture, as you said earlier, what are we really trying to do? All right, you know, being able to do a technique is one thing, but the physicality of it is really the vehicle. Really the vehicle for empowerment, encouragement, better health, which I'm speaking to the guru right now about that, but better health and proprioception, better dexterity, better communication skills. All of that in itself will make someone much safer.
It definitely will. Since you've gone to the subject of what this is all really about, I'd like to cite a couple of examples where it's actually been put to use. From what I understand, thank God neither Laurie nor Carrie have ever been in a situation where they've had to use this to defend themselves or protect themselves. But I think the most well-known and the most repeated story I've heard about is a situation that took place in Colorado. And I'd like you to talk about that a little bit.
Sure, absolutely. One of the longest-term one-touch coaches is a gentleman called Jim Pilkington. Jim's just a great guy, just one of the nicest guys on the planet. And Jim had a student, a 50-year-old lady, who he described as 100 pounds soaking wet. And she was on the bus, and a gentleman tried to rob her. I can't remember if it was a purse or a laptop, but he grabbed whatever it was she had and tried to take off. And she performed a technique very successfully and just dropped him on his face. I mean, he felt like a sack of potatoes. And she held him there. This is a man much, much younger than him, from my understanding, than her, rather. Held him there. The other passengers jumped on him and held him. When they saw that this lady had dropped her cane and immobilized this person, it just makes me smile and happy when I think about it. You know, you want these things to be successful. Drops him on the ground. The other passengers jumped on. The bus driver called ahead, and the guy got sent back to jail. And one of the things I really want to emphasize about that is it wasn't my student. It wasn't someone I was teaching. It was someone that a registered one-touch coach was teaching, which I think reflects very well on the project itself and the standard which we hold. But again, you hear many, many stories like this, too many, unfortunately. The fact that you hear about them, you know, it's a bit like being a doctor. You wish there weren't any illness in the world. However, you have a job because it is there. So you're not happy that it happens. But if it does go down, you really want your people to be able to defend themselves. That's the best way I can put it. And I was just proud as punch for this woman when I heard about that.
I'm sure there've been lots of incidences, but that's the one that I've heard multiple times. I actually heard the story from a woman that I was at the Seeing Eye with 2 years ago, who was going to the Colorado rehab facility that I guess this gentleman works with, and she was very interested in taking the program. And at that time, I had just told her, well, I've met Steven. He's a great guy. It sounds interesting. If they ever get nearby, I plan on doing it. And I don't know if she's ever followed up or not, but that was who I initially heard the story from. And it had this woman who had only recently lost her vision very inspired to want to do something. So it definitely, it carries a lot of weight in a lot of ways, both protecting people and just inspiring people to go on with their lives. We've been on here for a while, and I'd like to kind of wrap it up, but I'd like to start with the ladies. Lori, is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
You know, no, I just appreciate you having us on, and, you know, One Touch is a great program. It has made a difference in my life, and, you know, if people do get the opportunity to check it out, I hope they'll take that. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much, Carrie.
Thank you very much for having us on. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure to have the two of you on. You don't understand. Me asking Steven to have you join us was purely selfish. Otherwise, I would have had to listen to him for an hour.
Again.
Okay. Now, Mr. Nichols, my dear friend, let's make this a brief closing statement, if you don't mind. What's upcoming that's not with the VA that's open to the general public? Just mention a few places and dates, and we'll put them in the show notes. But just what's on the immediate horizon for One Touch?
Okay. Thank you for asking, Bill. April 13th to 15th, we have a coaching course in Long Beach, California. May 18th to 20th, we have the Texas School for the Blind in Austin, Texas. June 9th to 11th, we have a coaching certification in Columbus, Ohio. And in August 12th to 14th, we have a coaching certification in Chicago. Of course, we'll be at the NFB. You can catch Carrie and Lori at the ACB. And if there's any inquiries whatsoever, if they could go to info@onetouchproject.com, that's the digit one, no spaces, info@onetouchproject.com. And Bill, I'd also like to say we've known each other for a while, but I really appreciate this. It's really, really kind of you to have myself and the ladies on.
Well, it's a worthwhile project. I had a lot of fun with it. It's something people need to know more about, and you need more exposure. So I thought this was the ideal platform for that. And that wraps everything up. We've been talking with Lori and Carrie, who are both certified One Touch coaches, and Stephen Nichols, the founder, creator, and guru of the One Touch Project. And this is Bill with Real World Fitness saying have a fantastic day. Lots of great information there. I'd like to take this time to thank Lori and Carrie for joining Stephen and I for this interview. It's really exciting to hear the enthusiasm in their voices and the way that taking the training has enhanced their lives. You can't fake that. Now, it's one thing for Stephen to come on here and talk about how great his program is and how he believes it can enhance people's lives, but it's a far different thing to hear from people who've actually completed that training, are enthusiastic about it, obviously want to spread the word, and to see beyond what the training does, how it's enhanced their lives in other ways. That's really exciting to me. If you'd like to know more about the program, possibly go through the certification training, all of the upcoming events that they have currently scheduled are listed in the show notes. Additionally, the direct email contact information is there. Now, the listing that's there now is what's current while we're making this recording. However, they're always adding new dates around the country, so check the listing. If there's nothing near you, shoot them an email and say, hey, have you got anything coming up near Salt Lake City, New York City, wherever it may be? And if you'd like to talk with Lori and Carrie, and you're going to be in Dallas at the ACB convention this summer, they will be there doing demonstrations, answering questions, and trying to stir up some enthusiasm for a really great program. If you're going to be in NFB in Orlando, Stephen will be there with some of the other coaches, possibly including myself, also doing demonstrations. So whichever one of the national events you're going to attend this summer, there will be demonstrations there, and take the time to check them out and learn more about the One Touch Project. Now let's talk about next week's show. Next week, we're going to feature an interview I did a few months back with my good friend Brooks Kubik. At the time, he had just released his new nutrition book, which is as real world and basic and common sense as can be. No crazy diets, no quick fixes. And we spent a lot of time in that interview talking about food allergies, food sensitivities, the differences in eating organic versus eating processed foods. And there's a lot of really great information there. So that's next week here on the Real World Fitness Podcast. My guest will be Brooks Kubik talking about nutrition. And this is Bill saying thanks again for tuning in, and we'll speak to you very soon.